desire. Here come the Astros, breathing orange fire. Here come the Astros with winning on their mind. Here come the Astros, number one every time. Go, go, Astros.
Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 19 of the Banished to the Pen podcast, the audio component of the website Banished to the Pen, a group baseball blog produced by fans of the Effectively Wild podcast. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. This week, I am excited to be joined by returning guest Matt Jackson and newcomer Nick Koss. Hope I got those names right, guys. Guys, say hello to the internet.
What's up, everyone?
Hey. Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Very good, guys. It's good to have you guys on. Matt, it's always good to have a returning guest. And Nick, once again, it's always good to have somebody new in the house. So welcome. Glad to have you guys. And looking forward to talking some baseball.
Likewise. Yeah,
let's get this started.
Let's do it. I'm going to start with the new guy here, Nick. Just introduce yourself to the audience. You know, I know you've done some work on the site and everything else, but you know, Twitter handle, maybe if you want to share your day job, who you're a team of, just, you know, brief introduction to everybody.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Twitter at CostTheBoss34. But I am right now a marketing and finance student at Northeastern University in Boston, and I'm on an internship out in Seattle. So it's my first time out here on the West Coast catching some Mariners baseball. And I am a big Red Sox fan, so, you know, it's good that Northeastern's like a mile from Fenway Park, so.
Still getting a lot of schoolwork done, I'm sure.
I get it done when I can.
Best you can do. All right, Matt, for those that don't remember you, same question. Introduce yourself, say hi to everybody.
Here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, close to the Rogers Center, so I get to check out some live baseball as well. You can find me online at Beyond the Box Score, where I am a featured writer, or you can follow me on Twitter at Jack Santaigu, JackSontaigu. I think I spelled that wrong last time I was on the podcast, so I got it in front of me. I just work during the day, and I write about baseball at night, and when I've got time, I play with the pooch.
Very nice. I was, in prepping for this interview, I was looking at some of your old columns at Beyond the Box Score. Definitely must read. Big fan of your site, big fan of the site, obviously, and big fan of your work. So welcome back. And by the way, the last time I meant to ask you, I think, what does T-A-I-G-U stand for? Is there something missing?
Yeah, so anybody out there that speaks French will recognize accent aigu is one of the accents that's found in the French alphabet. So I grew up in Ottawa, Ontario, right by the Quebec border. So, you know, around French quite a bit. So it's a play on that. It's Jack Santaigu, kind of. It sounds similar, and it was a nickname I received in high school. So I stuck with it for Twitter. Didn't figure it'd be that popular and have to put any numbers at the end of it. So that was the appeal there.
Very cool. And I'm also glad to know that since I don't know any French, that's the reason I didn't get it. So that makes me feel a little better about myself. So
yeah, you didn't have a chance.
So. Yeah. So at least I didn't miss some obvious, you know, reference right in front of my face. So,
yeah.
All right, guys, let's dive into some baseball talk now that we've got the niceties out of the way, so to speak. Place I want to start this week is probably, I don't know if I want to say it's the biggest topic in baseball, but it's well, maybe it is. A-Rod and his 660th home run. Just to kind of begin the conversation, I don't think any of us expected that A-Rod was going to be playing as well as he is thus far this season. I mean, he's hitting for power, obviously. I'll start with Nick, the new guy. New guy Nick. Let's set the stage. Just your thoughts on A-Rod.
So being a Red Sox fan, I guess, is kind of natural for, you know, me to hate him because, you know, when he got traded to the Yankees, you know, that way you didn't have to, you know, there was someone you could hate and you didn't have to, you know, try to passive aggressively hate Jeter. But I think it's kind of ironic he hit the 660th homer at Fenway. Not 666 yet, but because, you know, is there? I don't think there's a ballpark he could have hit it in where he would have, you know, where he would have been booed as much before the at bat. But I mean, I guess good for him. But overall, I'm just, you know, the sooner he retires, the sooner I'll be, you know, moving on to the next person to hate.
And if I have it correct, it was a pinch hit home run, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. I thought that, you know, I was kind of disappointed he wasn't in the lineup because, you know, I wanted him to, you know, get booed and, and almost kind of, you know, kind of struggle and doing it in front of Fenway. Because if you remember back in 2013, that game where Dempster threw at him like four times in a row before hitting him.
Yeah.
He comes up later in the game, hits a home run, and then, you know, stands at home plate and like soaks in the boos for a second. So, you know, definitely I think, you know, he's baseball's best wrestling heel, and I mean, I love rooting against him. So.
Let me take a half a step back. Are you guys team A-Rod or team anti-A-Rod? It sounds like I think I know the answer with Nick. I don't want to speak for you, but it sounds like you're team anti. Matt, are you team A-Rod or not A-Rod? Because I am very team A-Rod.
I guess I'm somewhere in between you guys. I'm apathetic on the issue in general. I mean, it's been cool to watch him hit six bombs on his way in his first month back and after – you know, such a prolonged absence. So there's some, I've got respect for his, definitely respect for his skill set and his ability to succeed so far, and didn't expect him to be on pace to be a 3 or 4 war player out of the DH spot. And, you know, there's plenty of time for him to take a few steps back on that. But, I mean, his start's been impressive, but I think the whole thing, I mean, it's an important milestone, but it's funny that it seemed like more attention was paid to the Yankees' decision not to pay him those optional bonuses than it was really to the home run itself. And maybe, I don't know, maybe that's a little bit of the press. I don't think it's necessarily getting back at him, but the press not really being interested in A-Rod the player, but more still wanting to focus on A-Rod the sideshow. So I thought that whole thing was a non-story. I mean, an optional bonus. If I was a team that was not looking to re-sign the player, I'd probably try to get out of every optional bonus I could, whether or not he had been suspended for PEDs for, you know, the last calendar year. So I thought the focus of the whole story on that was a little bit curious, but A-Rod in general, I can take him or leave him.
I mean, I think... A-Rod jersey on my wall, so just I'm throwing that out there to begin with. But, Nick, I want to let you chime in here. I think, Matt, you make a great point. Is the story was more than – it was more so – the bonus is attached to the 660 home run that it actually has much to do with the actual home run, which was, you know, a big spot against the Yankees, a rival, a pinch hit home run in the ninth, if I have it correct. I mean, it, like you say, it is kind of interesting that the story has been the bonuses rather than the actual home run or the milestone. Nick, go ahead. I'm sorry.
First of all, I just kind of want to correct you there. I think it was the eighth inning, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, anyway, late game pitch and home run. But it's just with the bonuses, kind of, you know, as a business student, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting, especially when you hear about this language and where it sounds like it was definitely, you know, built to be, you know, ambiguous and optional and stuff. But I think more... you know, the reason the press is kind of keeping the story going is because then they can frame it as like A-Rod against the Yankees, A-Rod against MLB and stuff. You know, he's kind of, you know, it's almost kind of like, you know, that's the storyline A-Rod's going to have for the rest of his, you know, career, instead of focusing on the fact that, you know, he is a player who's putting up, you know, these numbers that have been seen, you know, only a few times in the history of baseball. And, you know, instead it's going to be, you know, what are the lawyers doing, not what are the players doing.
And I want to throw this out to you guys too, because and I know, you know, you have some background in finance. Are we surprised that this is even a surprise? I mean, if something's optional, you don't have a good relationship with the man, you have no intention of having him play beyond the season or, you know, getting rid of him as soon as you can, should we be surprised that they didn't pay him these bonuses? I mean, it seems like it should be like, well, no kidding, next topic kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with that. I mean, from just looking at my own professional life, if there's a client that you're pretty sure isn't coming back through the door, you know, you're going to focus on putting your resources where they're going to actually grow some long-term good rather than throwing them good money after bad, I guess would be the analogy. So, I mean, if it was Mike Trout and these bonuses were optional and he hadn't signed that extension yet, so maybe they're Jock Peterson, and Jock Peterson has these optional bonuses, and the Dodgers, you know, they'd like to sign him to a pre-arb extension, maybe. Maybe you start, well, I guess he wouldn't have the options. Anyway, if there's a situation where you think you can make some, save some money down the line or retain an asset down the line based by paying these options, and, you know, maybe that's something that you entertain. But for A-Rod, I mean, just he's dead money. He's going to come off the books and nobody's going to hear from him again, probably in Major League Baseball. So I don't see why you would pay the bonuses. It just seems to make good financial sense. I mean, even to the Yankees, $6 million is $6 million. It's not nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, to the Yankees, it's more a cost of $9 million because his bonus would be subjected to luxury tax, so they would have to pay $3 million luxury tax on top of that. But yeah, it's, you know, I think at this point it's clear that, you know, A-Rod's going to be around just, you know, just as long as the Yankees can't stomach eating the, you know, the huge amount of money left on his contract. And once, you know, once it gets to the point where they're like, okay, we're willing to eat, you know, this amount of money, they're going to cut him, be done with it. And yeah, I think we're going to see kind of like almost a Barry Bonds-esque banishment, kind of, where just every team collectively is like, no, we're not, you know, we're not dealing with that. So,
but the interesting,
like Jose Canseco.
Yeah.
But the other point is, and we kind of alluded to it at the beginning of this topic, is A-Rod's hitting. I mean, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but 6 home runs, you know, it's the first month of the year. He's on pace for, what, you said 3 or 4 war. The Yankees are in top of the division. I mean, he is contributing, so why would they eat that money? I mean, it's already a sunk cost, but if he's actually performing and giving you anything...
Well, I was listening to you guys talk about A-Rod, the question I was pondering was, what is there anything that he could do, do you think, to get people excited about his season? Like, say, chasing 40 home runs, do people see win over some fans? Is there anything that he can do to kind of, you know, get the kids excited again?
Go ahead, Nick.
Well, man, this is a... I mean, I think if he's like near the top of the leaderboard in homers, so kind of chasing 40, and, you know, maybe if he has, you know, some more of these, you know, kind of pinch hit, you know, or late inning heroics, maybe then people will start kind of focusing on what he's doing. But
yeah, I mean, the Yankees are in first place right now. I mean, he's been a substantial part of that. You wonder if there's going to be, at some point soon, a backlash against the backlash. I think I'm already seeing it on Twitter amongst the, you know, the sabermetric baseball community, which is mostly who I follow on Twitter. And there seems to be a little bit of the sea change of people kind of not defending him necessarily, but, you know, just accentuating the positives of his achievements rather than focusing on the negatives.
And like you say, when does the narrative change to, oh my gosh, this guy missed a year of baseball? He's gone through whatever he's gone through with the PEDs. We don't need to go through that again. And now at this age, he's actually a productive major league player. I mean, I think, when does that become the story rather than just pounding on him again and again and again about, you know, fans turning their back on him and all this other stuff?
I think if the Yankees stay, can hold on to first place for a few weeks and he can play well during that time, I wouldn't be surprised if he won himself a few fans back.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something that I've been thinking about is, back when he signed this contract, back in 2007, signed the 10-year contract, back then, if you had told the Yankees that this is what, you know, this is what his performance would be like in 2015, I think, you know, they'd be ecstatic that this contract wouldn't turn out to be, such a dud. And so it's kind of funny to see now where, you know, the Yankees may not be so happy, you know, he's hit 660 home runs, because now they're going to be dragged into a battle over the bonus.
I think, and even to build on that point, Nick, great point, how many of us would have taken the under on him hitting six home runs all season this year?
Well, I mean, it's not exactly apples to apples comparison, but I play fantasy baseball. Maybe you guys have heard of it. And in every league, every auction that I was in, he was going for a buck, or he wasn't even signed. Amongst the people that I, you know, my close baseball circles, he was getting no respect. So I think everybody's surprised. I think, yeah, his April is what people maybe expected his first two-thirds to look like maybe of the season.
Yeah, I drafted A-Rod in the last round just because he's my guy and just because I knew people would bug me about drafting A-Rod. It was great.
So you went from troll to first place.
Yeah, it's amazing how that worked. Exactly right. The troll job actually worked out. So, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the last person I can think of to take a year off and then come back and produce anything like this would be Scott Kazmir, I think, a couple of years ago. I mean,
yeah.
Is there any names that kind of spring to your mind?
I mean, the first name that jumped to me was, I went to Ted Williams, but we're talking about the war. I mean, that's we're talking a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we could go to an injury. I mean, Tommy John has happened, but that's not the kind of apples we're doing.
Kendrys Morales?
Although he's not necessarily gotten back, but he's still playing well. That's a good one.
No, I mean, he missed that full year for the injury, though.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing, if we were including injuries, we might find some examples. But just to find, I mean, this is like Michael Jordan in basketball. You know, kicked out of the league for 2 years and then comes back. I mean.
Was A-Rod gambling? I guess A-Rod is a gambler, too. Yeah, that comparison's pretty good.
Unintentional. They're both loved or hated. I'll say it that way, too. So, all right, guys, let's transition off of A-Rod. And I want to talk about maybe a happier story in some ways. The Houston Astros, I think it was Matt that pointed this out when we were talking pre-show. They've won 10 in a row now. We're waking up tomorrow when people are listening to this. They're in the first place, I believe, in the AL West. Hottest team in baseball now. Did you guys see this coming? I don't know where to start. Nick, I'm going to throw it to you. The Astros.
I did not see this coming. Beginning of the season, when I was kind of looking at each division and thinking where I could see each team going, I had the Houston Astros solidly in fourth, only ahead of the Texas Rangers. And I mean, I thought a good season for them would be, pushing up around 500, maybe sticking around in the wild card for, you know, till the beginning of September. But this is, I mean, I don't think anyone saw this coming.
And before I throw it to Matt, even into that point, you know, I know Altuve's playing great, but it's where is everybody? Where is this great performance coming from? I know Valbuena's got a few home runs. I know Gattis has had a good week, but I mean, where is it? You know, it's not Springer hitting 12 home runs and being the taste of baseball or the toast of baseball. Pardon me, but it's just Matt once again, the Astros.
Yeah, well, I think it's even more surprising when you look at Chris Carter, and he hit his third today, but he was ice cold for most of April. So, Jed Lowry, before he went down, I mean, he's out until the All-Star break, which is a tough blow for them, but he was OPS plus of 180. He had four home runs himself, so he was holding it down at shortstop, and now they've turned to Marwin Gonzalez and Jonathan Villar, so taking a little bit of a step back there, still winning. You know, Colby Rasmus was, late off-season signing that has turned out to be pretty productive. He's got, I think, around five home runs himself, and he's certainly an above-average offensive player this year. And then Jake Marisnyk, who was well below average for the in the beginning of his career, has turned it on. I'm not sure if you guys saw his unbelievable diving catch up Towels Hill yesterday.
That was amazing. That was a great catch.
That was cool. It's the kind of thing where you just, thankfully didn't blow out both his knees on that hazard. But I think, they've gotten pretty good production out of players that there wasn't a ton expected for. Like you said, Altuve is he's just a contact machine, and he's fast, and he's stealing bases, and so is Springer. Who would have thought Springer would have more steals than home runs at this point in the season? Not me. I thought his game was the power game, and after I think it was quad injuries that he suffered last year for a pretty substantial portion of the season, thought maybe they would take it easy on his knees. But from the offensive point of view, I think those are some surprises. And then, you know, can't forget the pitchers. And Dallas Keuchel's been he's been lights out. He's allowed just 3 earned runs this season so far. He's really shutting the door. And McHugh's not too bad either. He seems to be an above average pitcher. And then there's Feldman, who's Feldman. I mean, not much there. And Roberto Hernandez has been throwing the ball pretty well as well. So, you know, I think and the bullpen that they built, Gregerson and Neshek and Qualls, they seem to be getting the job done as well. So, I think just a lot of good value signings in the offseason, a lot of good value acquisitions have really put the Astros rebuild ahead of schedule. I mean, still, 4 or 5 years in the making, ahead of schedule from where we thought they'd be coming into this year.
Well, and that leads into the next point that I wanted to kind of talk about here is, how does this change the Astros going forward? I think, Nick, you nailed it when you said, you know, I think a lot of us were expecting maybe 500, you know, fourth place would probably be a nice finish, you know, because everybody was saying, well, Anaheim led the league in wins last year, I believe. You know, Seattle was up and coming. Oakland always seems to be in there. Now we fast forward, and I know we're still small sample size, but we're getting to 25, 28 games. I mean, to the point where it's not quite so small. And every other team in that division, I think, is under 500. You know, does Houston go in a little more? And, you know, maybe they promote Correa a little earlier than they think. Maybe they trade from some of the minor leaguers that they have to, you know, maybe try to push their chips in a little earlier. I mean, what do we think this, or how does this affect the Astros in 2015, this hot start?
I think if you look, 538 published this article last year when the Royals went on their huge winning streak. But, you know, these 10-game winning streaks really, I think, make it, you know, pretty good odds you're going to get into the playoffs, if only because, you know, those are 10 wins you've banked, you know, and, you know, you don't have to play as well for the remainder of the games to get in and with the second wild card. So I would not be surprised to see, you know, some more, you know, some aggressive call-ups or even maybe you know, a deadline kind of pickup or two, maybe, you know, a short-term rental, especially, you know, if/when some of the players kind of cool off and start, you know, producing closer to what we were expecting at the beginning of the year.
Matt, kind of same idea?
Yeah, I think the Correa call-up is interesting. You know, I think Villar particularly, I think maybe they're a bit higher on Gonzalez, but between the two of them, they've got decent play at shortstop. I don't know that you necessarily need to rush Correa and, he's spent so little time in AA now. I think this is his first season at AA, so I think you want to give him a little bit more time down in the minors. I think maybe if they're still in it, he's a late season or September call-up, but I don't think they're going to call up Correa this year. But looking at their numbers, it's really interesting. They're actually leading the majors in both home runs and stolen bases, and those are pretty impressive categories. I think they've got 40 home runs and over 30 stolen bases. So this is a team that's got elements of both the power game and the potential maybe to play some small ball. I mean, they're not good contact hitters, so I don't know that they want to be throwing up the hit and run on a regular basis and seeing the strike them out, throw them out, double play a couple times a game. But, you know, they've got elements of the speed and power game that I think complementary when one's faltering, maybe the other picks you up. So I don't know. I think this is definitely a team that you could see playing 500 baseball from here on out and still challenging for a wild card at the end of the season. I don't think they have enough to hold off the Angels. I don't know, Oakland's maybe out of it already. And the Sick Boys in Texas aren't going to be making any noise this year either. So, you know, I think they've got a decent shot at the wild card at least, and maybe the division.
All right, yeah. A quick question. Yeah. So, Matt, give me a win total, Matt, and I'm going to ask you the same question, Nick. Give me a win total, and where do they finish? How much has this hot start changed your opinion?
Yeah, definitely. It's changed my opinion. It's what I'm seeing from the team, and especially, like I said, the acquisitions that they brought in, guys that are, you know, established major leaguers, warts, definitely have some warts. So I think this is sustainable. I'll put me down for 86 wins and second in the division, and you know, I don't know if that puts them quite in the wild card, but I'll be conservative. I'll say that they'll just miss out on a wild card.
And Nick, same question, because I'm interested in this, and then I want to build this off into another topic.
Yeah, I would go more closer to 84 wins. I think that, you know, the Mariners are 10-15 right now. I think they're going to get better, and I think, especially with these, you know, with these young guys, I kind of want to see, you know, see a bigger sample of them playing like this before I'm ready to put them closer to the 86 wins Matthew said. But I will say this, though, in terms of the wild card, where, you know, one, you know, where you could be separated by one game and that can make difference between getting into the playoffs or not, with, you know, they led the league last year in defensive shifts. They're really aggressive with that. So, you know, maybe that might, you know, that's something to look for. Maybe it'll make the difference down the stretch.
I think I'm leaning a little closer to Nick. I think I'm a little closer to 500, maybe 83 wins, 84, somewhere in there. But Nick, where I wanted to go with this is, and we were talking about this off air, I know Matt was involved also, you know, it was about a year ago that Sports Illustrated put the Astros on the cover and said, you know, model franchise or something to that effect, or 2016 World Series champions. And then about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months later, it was the Cubs that everybody saw. You know, they traded for Russell, Bryant was blowing up, Soler, blah, 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 blah. Now where are we with the Astros and their rebuild? Does this 17-7 start and, you know, Correa's back on the field, Appel's playing a little better in the minor leagues, it looks like. Has this changed kind of your thinking and do you think deservedly so?
I think that I would... If I were running a team, I would not want kind of a full tear down, you know, 5-year plan like this, because, you know, still, you know, it's too early to say, to definitively say, oh, you know, it's worked every, you know, if you're not going for a title, you should just tear it apart. Or, you know, this doesn't work. You shouldn't ever, you know, tank, to borrow a basketball term, tank to this extent. But I think definitely, at the very least, it's shown that, you know, the front office knew what they were doing, shown that they knew what kind of players to go out and get, and that at least in a small sample, this, you know, that these, you know, the collection of talent they have is very capable of playing at a high level in the major leagues.
Matt, kind of the same question, same idea.
Yeah, and I mean, it almost reminds me, again, as a Royals fan, of the Royals when they had the best farm system in baseball, and I think it was Jeff Passan and others were crowning them as, you know, potential World Series champs within the next couple of years. And for the Royals, as a fan, I saw how narrow the margin was between not qualifying for the postseason at all and having that James Shields trade really kind of be a blight on the record of Dayton Moore that maybe caused him to lose his job, versus, you know, a crazy August and then a crazy wild card game and then, you know, just catching fire again in September and October. You see how narrow that margin is. So that's why I would say, I mean, to address the question of our the Astros, the new Cubs, I think they are. I think the Cubs had the potential to do this a little bit faster because of their ability to financial ability to support larger assets, guys like John Lester being able to trade for big contracts, you know, at the trade deadline. Not sure what the financial flexibility of the Astros is based on their, I know they've got a mess of a TV deal. So I think it's been slow, but I think it's real. And I think that this is a team that's going to, you know, I think they're going to be there until the end of the, I think they're going to be there in contention, at least until the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I kind of feel the same way. I feel like this has definitely changed. This hot start has changed my opinion in the organization a little bit, and it probably shouldn't because, you know, we're still in the small sample size. But to see them succeeding and seeing some of the things start to work out a little bit better, because last year was really rough for them with the Aiken, debacle and Knicks and everything else that went wrong. So, and in some ways, I'm happy to see Houston doing better. I think Lunau's a good guy and a good GM. So,
yeah, I mean, and especially, I mean, it's turned so much from after that Sports Illustrated cover that you were mentioning. They had that data leak that was just for a team that was so didn't mind tooting their own horn a little bit about the superiority of their process, to borrow another Dayton Moore term. You know, it was kind of a little bit of schadenfreude within the baseball community of these guys running their mouth and then their data is out there in the public sphere. So I think they've, you know, almost made a full 360 from the promise of the system to the humiliation of the data leaks. And now, you know, it seems like the fruits of their labor are starting to be realized. So I like it too. I think baseball, good baseball in Texas is always good for the league. So I'm happy to see at least one strong team from there.
Perfect, Matt. I think you summed that up perfectly. I think, like you said, it's come almost full circle. So, Matt, next topic I wanted to ask you about is, you're obviously a Royals fan. You said it a couple times. I don't know. I mean, they've now become, you know, the bullies on the street, and, man, they're looking to fight, it seems like, every game. Where I really wanted to ask you is, are you tired of defending the Royals as a fan?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. You know, during the playoff run, I living in Toronto, I'm just about the only Royals fan that any of my friends or family knows. So anytime things were going good, my phone would blow up with, text messages and emails and things like that, congratulating, saying, you know, such a long suffering fan, what a wonderful return on this investment you've made. So, I enjoyed it then, so I can't exactly stop answering my phone now that things have gone a little bit sideways. But I will say that, you know, what I've said to most of the people that have gotten in touch with me is, for the most part, these aren't things that you really can defend. I mean, it's a little bit embarrassing to see Kelvin Herrera throw at Brett Laurie's head. I don't like headhunting. I don't like hitting players intentionally for any reasons. I mean, I'm probably the biggest anti Brett Laurie fan around, and I still don't want to see him getting dotted by a 99 mile per hour heater from Ventura. So I haven't necessarily enjoyed defending them, but I haven't defended them too much. I mean, was I happy about the takeout slide on Escobar? No. You know, they've been on the receiving end of a lot of hit batsmen as well. I mean, Rios is on the DL with a broken hand, courtesy of a hit by pitch. The first series against the White Sox, it seemed like they were getting dotted all the time. So, you know, I can see where somebody like, I don't mind defending someone like Kane, who during that White Sox brawl just absolutely popped his top. And you know, from the guy that seems like one of the smiliest in the big leagues, to see him turn into a haymaker throwing wild man was, understandable. He's been hit by four pitches this season and he's sick of it. What I don't like seeing is this stuff, like I mentioned with Kelvin Herrera, throwing, I mean, behind the back of Brett Laurie. There's no need to do that. I guess you're going to try to defend yourself, but I don't think that anybody was too confused about what he was saying as he was leaving the field. But I think the least defensible of all is Eric Hosmer giving out Elcides Escobar's phone number, whether he got it right or wrong. I mean, keep it in the clubhouse. You don't need to be throwing your buddy's digits to the other team. If they want them, they can, you know, pay a DNS service or something to look them up for them.
That's interesting take.
I didn't like it. I thought, you know, if Brett Lurie wants to apologize, he can walk himself down to the clubhouse and meet Elcides at the door. I wonder if he breaks up with his girlfriends over text message as well.
Nick, jump in here because I don't want to, you know, exclude you, so to speak. But that's an interesting take, and I want to circle back to that with you. But I obviously envision this segment going, you defending them, and then you and then Nick and I pounding on you for, you know, 10 minutes about the Royals. But
let's edit that out. Yeah, I mean, I would have thrown at his head too. Herrera needs to. He should have brought a bat out there with him and gone after Royals.
Jump in, Nick. Jump in.
Oh man. Well, yeah. I mean, that whole just text, you know, text messaging. Did he? Did he not? Was it the right number? Wrong number? That was just. I mean, it's like, come on, like, I guess I get, like, if your guy gets hit, then, you know, your pitcher has to go out there and, you know, throw out someone. But, like, I mean, if you're going to do that, which I don't think you should, but it's going to happen. So, if you're going to do that, why all this, you know, kind of back and forth and stuff? Like, it's just, it almost feels like to me that the Royals are, like, trying to get, are trying to become, like, you know, these, you know, kind of like the big boys on the block, you know, because they had this incredible run last year. Instead of, you know, it's a, I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with you there. I don't know if they think they're the big guys on the block. I think maybe that they're not used to getting everybody's A game and to have the competition coming in with guns blazing. And for every play to be, you know, have as much hanging on it as it does, because the last two seasons, they didn't come into the season. Well, yeah, they had promise and they were, you know, a couple of people picked them as sleeper playoff teams. They weren't necessarily a squad that was coming in with a whole lot of expectations, and they do this year. And I think, you know, Yordano Ventura in particular seems like a guy who's out there just a little bit too jacked up. And I was a mouthy teenager, and I was mouthy in my early 20s, and I can kind of sympathize with maybe a little bit of what he's going through out there. I think that he is just having trouble keeping his emotions in check when there's so much riding on every game and every play. I think that there might be an element of them kind of adjusting to being the chased rather than the chaser in this as well.
And Matt, I want to, and to that point, you have a much better perspective, but I almost see it a different way. I see the Royals as, wait a minute, you know, we got to the World Series last year and we almost won. You know, we were, you know, a couple of breaks here, a couple of breaks there. And then it seemed like the whole offseason, everybody was tearing them down. You know, oh, well, they're not going to do it again. You know, the Tigers are going to be there. And, oh, Cleveland's, you know, the upstart team in that division. It almost feels like to me like they're, wait a minute, we're not getting the respect we deserve. You know, everybody talks about, oh, well, they only won 86 games, and they, you know, squeaked in, and then they got, you know, lucky in the wild card game. Just your take of, could it almost be the opposite perspective of, like, wait a minute, they're not getting the respect they think they deserve, so, and then they're getting hit on the field, then they feel like they're being disrespected on the field, not even, you know, by their opponents. Could there be some element of that?
I don't know. I guess,
do you know what I'm going after anyways, or trying to allude towards?
Sorry?
Or do you know what I'm trying to allude to?
Yeah, no, okay. I definitely understand. The reason I don't think that that's the case is I just, at least I hope that athletes don't put that much stock into what we think of them. You know, I think there's, you know, there's always going to be the guy who's in the clubhouse saying, like, nobody gave us any respect. But I think that that's the vocal minority within a baseball team. I don't necessarily think that that's the... and I would hope that that's not the focus of the team. What I think is that, like I said, I think that they're getting everybody's best shot. And I think that people are, you know, people are coming to Kauffman Stadium and people are welcoming the Royals, and they're ready for a hard fought series. And especially with a team that, you know, kind of manufactures runs the way they do. I think that's a frustrating way to lose to a team, to be kind of a death by a thousand paper cuts. You know, you give up five home runs and maybe it's a little bit easier. It happens so quickly. Maybe it's easier to leave that one in the past, but where you feel like you're in the games and they're close games and there's a lot of emotion. That would be my guess as to why they're coming into these kind of fraught situations fraught with conflict.
And then my next question to both of you guys, both as a Royals fan and a non-Royals fan, is where does this go from here? Are we talking about this in August? Are they still trying to be, and I don't want to use bullies because they probably don't feel like they're being bullies, but are we still talking about them getting in a bunch of fights, or are we talking about this as, oh, that happened. Oh, yeah, I remember that. That happened early in the season kind of thing. Go ahead, Nick, you start.
Yeah, I think it might not be resurfacing around August, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see how much it gets brought up when they go to Oakland for a series in June and kind of how that all goes down. But I think, you know, 162 games is too long to be, you know, consistently, you know, getting into benches clearing situations. So, I think by the time, you know, August, September rolls around, you know, it'll be one of those things where, you know, when someone gets hit by a pitch in a Kansas City game and, you know, both sides seem to kind of be on edge, you know, people will think back to that and kind of be on the edge of the seats waiting for something to happen. But I don't think it's going to ultimately end up defining their season.
Kind of your thoughts, Nick, or pardon me, Matt, both on Nick's comments and on kind of my question?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they're facing the White Sox four more times, I think. So it's plenty of opportunity for Chris Sale or Jeff Smarza to, you know, start this whole thing back up again, or, you know, or for Kelvin Herrera or somebody else on the Royals, Yordano Ventura, to start it back up again. I think that, you know, they've said the right things, that it's over, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did flare up one more time, especially if the White Sox find themselves in any kind of contention this season. I think it will happen again. One more bench clearing ball for good measure.
Okay. All right. I don't like it, but I like the brawls. I just don't like the actual hitting of people, which is...
Yeah, no, the brawls are hilarious. I mean, that one, it's like an amoeba moving around the field, just this kind of undulating mass of bodies. And, you know, I'm watching it on my laptop and trying to figure out who's on top of who and what elderly man has been thrown to the ground this time. So,
and let me be clear,
they're definitely
entertaining. And let me be clear, I don't like any of the violence, but I like the scrum of bullpen men running out like they're going to do anything when they could just fight the guys that they're also running side by side out there towards. So
yeah,
it's just, the whole thing is great except for the violence. I don't have any interest in that, but
no, I think it's hilarious though, these guys that, you know, make millions of dollars with their hands, like Jeff Smarza. Smarza is coming up for free agency and dude is throwing haymakers. Like he's trying to put someone's nose down their throat, and he's zero consideration to, you know, the six or seven figure deal that he's, or what, eight figure deal. Well, that's a lot of zeros that he's leaving on the table if he manages to shatter his hand. So you know it's real when a guy is willing to flush $100 million down the toilet just to get at a, you know, below average major league starter in Anderson Volquez.
Yeah, no, it's always, I always find it funny to watch the bullpen guys kind of jog in like, okay, like we're here because we have to, and then they just end up kind of standing around and, you know, maybe holding a guy back. But, you know, it's like, you know, I always wonder what goes through their head. You know, are they just like, oh man, like I gotta get up, go jog into the infield, and then jog back to the bullpen? Or like, if they see something going on, are they like, oh man, like, you know, I gotta get in there?
Yeah, I mean, if it was an actual fight, wouldn't these bullpen guys just all of a sudden spear the guys running next to them or try to take, you know, tackle them and fight them? It's such
a faux... We'll have to go back and look at some footage of Kyle Farnsworth coming out of the pen to fight people to know how bullpen pitchers that want to fight look when they're leaving the pen.
Yeah, he is the number one seed. He's definitely the top dog of looking for fights out of the bullpen.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's 100% serious about
which his... I kind of respect, I have to say.
Oh, an ex-Royal, too. They should bring him back into the fold, man.
Oh, you know, he's got the stain, I guess, somehow. All of a sudden, you spend a little time in that Kauffman Stadium locker room. Good Lord. So, I no idea how to transition off that. But one other topic that Nick brought to the forefront pre-show and I kind of want to build off of is it's been a weird year in baseball so far. And once again, I know it's small sample size, but, you know, yesterday we saw two games end on, and I don't know how to properly explain this, by runners being hit by the ball and being made out. We, you know, like we alluded to earlier, the Houston Astros are 17-7. The Mets ran off a 10-game winning streak. They're leading the division until a few days ago. The Nationals were playing terrible. They still are. Just, I'd love to throw it to you guys. Just one, to talk about, you know, that play yesterday and if you guys saw it and your thoughts. But two, just bigger picture, just kind of the season. The biggest surprise to you, biggest goofy is not a great word, but it's kind of the one that's coming up. Once again, I'll start with newbie Nick.
I've seen clips of the two walk-off runner gets hit by the batted ball plays, and it seems to me the first one, well, it was kind of more a line drive, so there it seems to be a little more understandable, like the ball just, you know, kind of got on the runner too quickly and he couldn't move out of the way. But the second one, it was up closer to around second, and it looked like it was a ground ball, you know, took a couple of hops. So you would think at that point the runner would, you know, be able to look and avoid it. But I guess for me, kind of the weirdest thing that's been happening this season is Hanley Ramirez hitting 10 home runs and, you know, looking really good at the plate. But then go to the outfield, and there are just sometimes when the ball's in the air, you're holding a breath like you would, you know, when it's an 8-year-old, you know, circling underneath the fly ball. So I guess for me, especially as a Sox fan, it's, you know, it's kind of a cool contrast to, you know, see him looking so good one second, then the next second just looking completely lost.
And
it's so strange, too, for a – I mean, I know that he basically ate an 8-year-old in the off season, and that's why he's not moving around, but like around as quickly. But I mean, he played shortstop last year. Like, you'd think it's he going from one of the premium defensive positions to one of the, you know, the least premium, whatever the anonym for that is. You know, you'd think that he would be a little bit more suited to the position, I guess. Seeing him just boot the ball around out there is surprising for me as well.
And Nick, that's a great point, because I mean, how many times have we heard scouts say if you can play shortstop, you can play anywhere on the diamond? Well, apparently not. You can't play left field and Fenway.
Yeah, increase your body mass by like 40%.
And and I do think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, like you say, he swallowed a bowling ball or two in the off season. But I think that's a great point by Nick. That's something you don't see every day if you're not a Sox fan. But his defense has been so much worse than I ever anticipated.
Yeah, it's almost like if he hadn't hit 10 home runs in the month of April and just completely carried that off, you know, help carry the offense to offset just the awful pitching that some of the awful pitching performances they've had. I mean, would people, you know, fans in the organization start looking at that, the $88 million contract he signed and thinking like, oh man, wish there was a return policy on this one.
Yeah. No question. What's he going to look like in a few more years? Exactly right.
Like a DH.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well said. Well, bravo.
Yeah, well, sorry. I was just about to say, Poppy might not be around for the last year of the contract, so they might be able to kind of almost mercifully put him in that role. But until then, I mean, it's going to be an adventure in left field and Fenway.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of gifts definitely this season. So, Matt, kind of the same question. What's been kind of most surprising to you, I guess, is kind of the way I'm framing this question.
I guess two pitchers being pulled during a no-hitter was surprising to me. Trevor Bauer is the first one earlier in this season. I think he took it into the sixth inning. And then on Friday night, Kansas City Royals' Chris Young took a no-hitter through five before handing it over to the bullpen. And ultimately, Kelvin Pereira lost it in the seventh. So I guess that's, you know, that's one of those things that you kind of, I don't know, you, it's one of those dogmatic things where you say, like, nobody gets pulled during a no-hitter. But, you know, with Bauer, you can understand it. He's still a pup, and he's got a lot of promise, and I think he's going to be a – I think he's on his way to becoming an ace, finally. So you can see why Tito would pull him, you know, in the sixth with his pitch count getting up there. But Chris Young, I mean, who cares? He's 6'10". I think he can handle it. So I was surprised to see Yost pull him out. But that inning, the fourth inning, I think, when he walked the bases loaded and struck out the side was that's Edwin Jackson no-hitter territory right there.
Yeah, that's special stuff.
Yeah.
Just real quickly, and I don't know if – I don't have any numbers in front of me, but the biggest surprise to me this season, and I know we've been seeing it, has been the lack of offense. I mean, I go to, you know, minor league games, college games, pro games. I'm at minor league parks more than I am the majors. No one's scoring any runs. It's not like there are any runs being scored in the minors either. I mean, it's just amazing to me. And then I watch the majors, and aside from occasional games here or there where somebody really hits, I mean, it's 2-1, 3-2, 1-0. I mean, you know, I get a little bit of, you know, Nationals, whatever, and they're not scoring. I mean, nobody I'm watching is scoring any runs, and it's just it's. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, when are we going to see baseball really do something to try to change this? They did something this offseason to speed up the game. I think we've seen some positives with those changes. Is this going to be the offseason where we see them lower a mound or change the way relief pitchers are used or what the change is going to be? Because I think we're starting to hit that tipping point where pitching is too much better than the offense.
Yeah, no, I went to a Mariners-Angels game beginning of the season, and I mean the game was, you know, it was a 2-0 game. The teams combined for I think 7 hits, and it was over in like 2 hours 15 minutes. And I know, you know, there's been a couple other games that have, you know, been 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 that have finished, you know, close to, you know, to 2:30. So, you know, I guess the question you have to put in, you know, with that too is there a way to kind of increase the offense while keeping the time of game, pace of game, you know, down where Major League, you know, where MLB wants it? Because it seems that they're pretty happy with the pace of play right now.
And this is a whole nother topic, so let's keep this really brief. But have you guys been impressed with the pace of play? Because I've noticed a difference, and I've been pleased with the both time of game and, as Nick pointed out as well, the pace of play.
I'll be honest, I haven't really noticed much of a difference. And now I might not be able to watch quite as much baseball as you guys do, because I've got a child, and I want to spend the time that she's awake with her. So I don't necessarily watch baseball other than, you know, making sure to check on the Royals. I'm not able to watch baseball every single night. But I haven't noticed a huge difference. And I don't really want baseball to get any shorter. I understand why it's important, but I like having West Coast games that go until 1:30 in the morning. I mean, that's the time in my day where, you know, I can pretty much guarantee that I can sit in front of the TV and watch a baseball game. So I like long games. I like baseball. So anytime that you can have a little bit more to enjoy, that's fine with me. And I'll just, going back to the runs per game question, I'll stump for the Royals one more time. Just tune in to watch their games. I think they're right around the top of the league in average runs scored per game, close to 6 or just over 5 maybe.
Which I would not have predicted preseason.
No, but again, it's that small ball. They have the lowest hard hit contact rate in the major leagues, and they have nearly the most runs scored. So, you know, somebody should write an article about that.
Nick, same question. I'm trying to, you know, be kind of quick, but your thoughts on kind of the pace of play. Have you noticed a difference, and thoughts?
You can sometimes notice a little difference just because there's not as much dead time between pitches. So, you know, there's less kind of like, super long at bats where, you know, you kind of start to lose interest to only see the guy fly out. But I think other than that, you really haven't noticed it. I would say to notice it, it's kind of more noticing the fact that, you know, Big Poppy is not, you know, adjusting his gloves 5 times and spinning his hands, you know, 6 times and then kind of stepping in. So I think it's something that's kind of hard to notice in a particular instance, but overall I think it's been a little bit of an improvement, but yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we could go to so many other topics. I mean, we could branch out into pace of play, or we could branch out into scoring runs like we were touching on. But I think we need to wrap it and kind of cut it here. So I'm going to go back to the original question that I asked you guys, Nick and Matt, both of you guys. Just thanks for joining me. And how about your Twitter, where people can find your work, either at Banished to the Pen or otherwise, and any kind of plugs you want to throw out there. So I'll go alphabetical to finish. Nick, let's go Nick first.
So you can find me on Twitter at KOSSTheBoss34. You can find my stuff at Banished to the Pen. I've written a few pieces for them now, as well as part of the Tampa Bay preview. I don't want to give too much away, but I am working on something now, a little kind of, if Major League were to allow draft picks to be traded, how I think that might look, so... hopefully that'll be up in a little bit. And yeah.
Nobody scoop Nick out there, okay, guys?
Yeah, don't take it from Nick. He's gonna write it. So
yeah, it's his property now. I like your Twitter handle.
Yeah,
too,
so do I. I'm a big fan of it.
Good one.
Yeah, that was to the surprise of no one, that was the Twitter handle I created in high school. So
very nice.
It just sounds so funny to me, Twitter existing in high school.
Oh, it would have been so dangerous for me in college if Twitter had been around. Oh, my gosh. All of a sudden, your genius thoughts at 3 a.m.? Yeah, not so genius. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's been a minefield for me to navigate.
Matt, same question, just your plugs and where people can find your work.
Sure. It's at JackSontagu, JackSontagu. On Twitter, and you can read my work at Beyond the Box Score on the SB Nation network of blogs. And I'll be back. I'm not done with writing for Banished to the Pen yet. I just I got to invent that 26-hour day, and I'll be posting regularly again.
Well, we miss your work, but like I said, your work is top notch, and definitely go check it out over there as well. Yeah. So, guys. Thank you so much, Matt. It's great having a return guest. You nailed it, as you know, once again. And Nick, great having you here. You know, inaugural guest or your first time on. You know, great job. So great making your acquaintance, talking a little baseball, and I think we covered a lot of ground in an hour.
Awesome. One love.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll look forward to talking to you guys soon.
Take it easy.
Yep.
And that was episode 19 of the Banished to the Pen podcast with Matt Jackson and Nick Koss. Thanks again to both of them for joining me today, and both were terrific guests, so I hope to have them back here in the near future. Also, I would quickly like to thank all the writers, the editors, contributors, technical staff at Banished to the Pen for all the hard work they do. We're putting out a great product. The site is really rolling, and we're doing some great things. So there are a lot of people doing things, you know, up front and a lot of people behind the scenes. So thank you to all of them. This episode is a wrap. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, at natsgm.com on Twitter, reminding you, be nice to your fellow listeners.